All right, welcome back to the deep dive. You know, one of the things that always gets me thinking in law is how far does responsibility actually go right? Like when something goes wrong, when a crime's committed, it's not just about what happens in that exact moment. It's about the whole chain of events.
Oh, yeah.
The consequences that ripple out. And today, we're diving deep into a case that really pushes that question to the limit. We're looking at State v. Hokanson. This is an Idaho Supreme Court case from way back in 1972, but it deals with issues that are still so relevant, especially when we're talking about felony murder.
Yeah, definitely still resonates.
I mean, think about it. A robbery, a homemade bomb, and then a death. But here's the twist. The death happens after the perpetrator's already in custody. So how does that even work legally?
It's a tough one, right? Oh. It makes you really think about where the line is.
Exactly. So if you're listening and you're thinking about a career in law, this deep dive is for you. We're going to untangle some pretty complex legal concepts today. Proximate cause.
What?
Right, that direct link between an action and its consequence.
Cause and effect.
And the continuous transaction doctrine, which is going to be huge in understanding this case. By the end, we want you to not just know what the court decided, but why they decided it and what it means for the legal world even today.
Absolutely. We're going to break it down.
So, to get there, we've got a great set of sources. We've got analysis from legal experts on Hokanson, a super detailed case brief that lays out all the facts and arguments.
Oh, yeah, that's helpful.
And then even a standard legal brief to give us that clear, concise legal framework.
Yeah, so we're coming at it from all angles.
Multiple perspectives to get that complete picture. Okay, are you ready to jump in?
Yep, do it.
All right, so let's set the scene. January 13th, 1972, Dean's Drug Center in Lewiston, Idaho. You know, imagine a pretty typical evening, maybe quiet, and then Fred Hokanson walks in.
Oh, boy.
But he's not there for a prescription refill. He's got a homemade bomb and a knife.
That's a bad sign.
Yeah, his intent is robbery. So what happens next?
So Hokanson, he announces he's there to rob the place, make some threats, and then a struggle breaks out with the store owner, Kent Dean. And this is where it gets really scary. During the fight, Hokanson reveals he has a bomb.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so now it's not just a robbery. It's like a whole other level of danger.
Absolutely. So thankfully, the police arrive, right? They subdue Hokanson. They get him in handcuffs.
In custody.
Seems like that should be the end of his direct involvement, right?
You would think so.
But here's where it gets truly tragic. The bomb detonates.
Oh, no.
And it's awful. Officer Ross D. Flavel, he picks up the bomb, probably trying to, you know, secure it, protect everyone, and it explodes. Officer Flavel is killed instantly.
What tragic.
Another officer and Mr. Dean, the store owner, they're injured as well. It's just devastating.
Awful situation.
And it gets worse. The next day, they find notes that Hokanson had written. These notes suggest that he needed drugs, like that was his motive for the robbery.
It's the desperation.
And even more disturbing, the notes have threats against Dean's family. It's really chilling stuff.
So this is planned, premeditated.
Yeah, it goes way beyond just a spur-of-the-moment crime.
Yeah.
So Hokanson's convicted, first-degree murder, life sentence. Makes sense, right?
Right.
But he appeals.
Right. So what's his argument? What's he saying?
So he challenges the trial on two main points. The first one, he says some of the evidence they used against him was just too prejudicial. He's talking about, like, photographs of the deceased officer.
Oh, wow.
And testimony about the condition of the body. You know, stuff that's really graphic.
Yeah, I can see why he would object to that.
Right. And his point is that this kind of evidence, it would just overwhelm the jury, make them emotional, and they wouldn't judge the case fairly.
It could cloud their judgment, for sure.
Exactly. The second big issue he raises, how can he be held responsible for a death that happened when he was already under arrest?
Oh, that's interesting.
He's basically saying once he's in handcuffs, he's not in control anymore. So how can he be liable for what happens with the bomb?
Yeah, like the chain of events is broken.
Right, like someone else took over. So what did the Idaho Supreme Court say about all this?
Well, they upheld the trial court's decision, meaning they agreed with the guilty verdict on first-degree murder.
So they cited against Hokanson on both those arguments?
They did, but they had their reasons.
Let's break it down, starting with the graphic evidence. Why did they allow it?
So the court's reasoning was all about proving the elements of first-degree murder. Remember, they have to prove everything beyond a reasonable doubt. And they said this evidence, as tough as it was to see, was relevant to showing just how reckless Hokanson was being.
Right.
I mean, think about it. bringing a homemade bomb to rob a store, that's already reckless endangerment.
Yeah, it shows a total disregard for human life.
Exactly. And the court actually acknowledged that this kind of evidence, yeah, it can be upsetting for the jury, but there's this balancing test, right? They have to weigh the value of the evidence against the potential for unfair prejudice.
It has to be more helpful than harmful.
Right. In this case, they decided the evidence was crucial because it really demonstrated how dangerous and reckless his actions were, and that outweighed any potential prejudice.
So they're saying, look, we get it. It's tough to see, but it's necessary to understand the severity of what he did.
Exactly.
Okay, so that's the graphic evidence. Now, what about that bigger question of responsibility after the arrest?
This is where it gets really interesting legally.
Right. He said he was in custody, not in control.
Yeah.
Game over. But the court brings in this thing called the continuous transaction doctrine. What is that?
So basically, the court said, no, you can't just separate the attempted robbery from the explosion. They're not two isolated events. It's one continuous, unbroken chain of events that Hokanson started.
Okay, so they're connecting everything together.
Exactly. He set that whole dangerous situation in motion by bringing that bomb to the drugstore to commit a felony. And just because he was arrested, that didn't magically erase the fact that he was the one who created this huge risk in the first place.
Right. Like, he put the dominoes in place and they were already falling.
Exactly.
And the court really emphasized this point.
Oh, they were very clear. They said, and I'm quoting here, a person is criminally liable for the natural and probable consequences of his unlawful acts, as well as unlawful forces set in motion during the commission of an unlawful act. So not just the act itself, but everything that flows from it.
Oh, that's powerful.
It is. And they went on to say, the appellant, meaning Hokanson, voluntarily set in motion an instrumentality which carried a very real probability of causing great bodily harm. Death ensued, and the fact appellant was under arrest does not erase criminal liability.
So they're basically saying you can't escape responsibility just because the worst outcome happened after you were caught.
Right. It's about the foreseeable consequences of your actions, even if you're not physically in control at the moment of the tragedy.
Wow. And when you think about it, this all ties back to the whole point of felony murder, right?
Yeah. It's designed to deter people from engaging in these inherently dangerous activities. The law is saying if you commit a felony and someone dies as a result, even if it wasn't your primary goal, you are going to be held accountable.
Because you created that risk.
Exactly.
So for all the aspiring lawyers out there, what are the key takeaways from Hokanson? What should they be paying attention to?
So the court didn't necessarily create any brand new legal tests here, but they really hammered home a few key factors that come up again and again in these felony murder cases.
All right, give us the rundown.
So first up, reckless indifference. The court really focused on whether Hokanson's actions showed a blatant disregard for human life.
Right, like the bomb was a clear sign of that.
Exactly. It's not just about intending to kill someone. It's about creating a situation where death is a very real possibility.
Right.
Second, that continuous transaction doctrine we talked about. The court was super clear that the robbery and the death were all part of the same event, one continuous stream. And then finally, proximate cause. Even though Officer Flavel picked up the bomb, the court said the death was a direct result of Hokanson's actions, that it was foreseeable.
So even with someone else involved, he's still responsible.
Right. It goes back to that initial act of bringing the bomb into the store.
And all of this, it's meant to prevent people from getting off the hook just because the worst thing happened after they were stopped.
Exactly. The law is looking at the whole picture, the entire chain of events.
So to make this even more concrete, think about that hypothetical scenario we saw in one of the expert analyses. A bank robber plants a timed explosive, gets arrested before it goes off.
Right. Classic example.
So based on what we learned from Hokanson, how do you think that would play out in court?
I think it's pretty clear.
Yep.
That robber would likely still be charged with murder.
Even though they were already in custody.
Yeah. Because of that stream of events doctrine, the court would look at the whole thing. The planning, the planting of the bomb, the risk created.
Right. It's about the entire criminal act, not just the moment of death.
Exactly.
So big takeaway for our listeners. Courts don't just look at a snapshot in time. They look at the whole sequence, the risks created, and what naturally flows from those risks.
Absolutely. Hokanson is such a powerful reminder that liability, especially in felony murder, can reach further than you might think. It highlights how crucial proximate cause and the continuous transaction doctrine are in defining responsibility. and shows how even graphic evidence, as tough as it is, can be essential to understanding the full picture of a crime.
So much to think about. And here's one last thought for everyone out there. If this continuous transaction idea can be applied to felony murder, do you think it could also apply to other areas of the law?
Now that's interesting.
Right, like situations where a series of events leads to harm, even if it wasn't intentional, where would we draw the line?
That's a great question to ponder.
It's something to keep in mind as you continue your legal journey. Understanding these landmark cases, it's not just about memorizing facts, it's about developing that deeper understanding of how the law works in the real world.
Couldn't agree more.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll see you next time.